Good afternoon. This is Milt Davis. Welcome to the Ontology Summit 2011 virtual session on applications and case studies. Today, which is the 27th of January, we're going to be talking about making the case for ontology from the standpoint of presenting case examples and case studies. So today's session title is called Harvesting the Value of Ontology's Recent Case Examples. My co-chair is Mike Bennett. Our speakers today include Chuck Rayberg and Greg Barwell, and our other friend here, who's I always remember your last initials, or YZ, but Jeff is the name he goes by. And so today, to get things started off, I'm going to first present a précis or some overviews of some different case examples that illustrate ontologies of work In different kinds of applications. And then I'll introduce other speakers, and they will, you know, tell you about themselves and then move into their case examples as we go forward. For those of you, you should have downloaded the slides. I will call out the slide number as I go along. We're on slide number one, and it's the title slide for Harvesting the Business Values of Ontologies. And this is part one of our kind of recent case examples. We anticipate including more in future sessions as well. Let's go to slide two. I thought I'd start off by just sort of looking at an example of how ontologies are already in the mainstream consumer market. And many of you know, of course, the story of Siri, but I think it's worth kind of re-emphasizing that as we move towards smart platforms, smart devices, app phones, whatever you want to call them, we're also beginning to see the emergence of new paradigms in user interaction and heading in the direction of context-aware services, semantic browsing, expert systems, and in this case, virtual assistants that do more than wield information to actually complete tasks. So in the case of Siri, these are just some excerpts from a presentation they did a while back before they were acquired by Apple. And if your computer were really smart, it could understand and communicate with you in language that you understand. It would make sense of your environment. There would be more than, you know, keyboard and keyword interactions. It would use different sensory modalities. It would help you solve everyday problems, and it would be at your service. So the, you know, the slide basically makes the case, how are ontologies, you know, being used in this? Well, they're being used, of course, as part of the natural language understand and domain, and task models. The theory doesn't know everything about everything. It knows, some things about, things you want to do. Like, suppose I want to get a reservation, you know, romantic, Chinese dinner for two at 7:30. Well, it can help me sort out those kinds of things. And the second kind of thing that that Siri does is provide a lot of that intelligence right at the point of interaction with the system. So it's used of cloud computing, it's use of various kinds of services. Now, when we hear people talk about linked open data, there's now been a lot of discussion about the value of being able to connect different information. It's more than simple aggregation. Well, the argument that I make from applications like Siri is that, you know, the value of aggregating and connecting services together produces a new kind of and a new order of value. So what Siri basically mobilizes 50, 60, 70 different apps, I'm not sure how many now, because it's been growing, and able to understand what you're requesting, can fail gracefully if it doesn't understand or ask for more, confirms what it, you know, what it thinks it understands, brings you results. So if I said, where's the nearest Starbucks, it might come up with a list of the Starbucks nearest me using GPS, validate that that's what I was kind of looking for, and then maybe offer me the option to go order me my latte. So we've seen a progression that when you get the interface right, if you do something that people value, you know, the world will, you know, draw your applications into the market. So as we move in the direction of smart and intelligent user experience, this is an area where ontologies have significant implications. Now I'm going on to slide number three. This is a kind of a, what I call a low-hanging fruit sort of application. This is do-it-yourself data exploration. And the formula I'm going to use, you'll see on the slides, is kind of a challenge, a solution, and benefits, and then maybe a picture to kind of give some idea of what's going on. But what happens a lot when people are working with spreadsheets and databases, there are certain events that come along, trigger actions that researchers and analysts have to examine the data. And oftentimes, if these are exceptions or unusual circumstances or just, you know, the need to do multidimensional analysis, they want to combine information from different sources, different spreadsheets and databases, different databases. And one kind of way you can go at that is make a multidimensional database, which is a kind of an extract, transform, and load. It's kind of expensive. It takes a bit of time. Another way is to kind of do it sort of on demand as you go along. Now, this slide on the lower left hand, you know, is complements of Cambridge Semantics, which is an application where you can, it's basically a way of exposing the concepts in a spreadsheet, that is what you mean by column heading, and conveying them into an RDF store, which is on a server. And being able to, and there's an app for that that works as a plug-in to Excel, in this case. And it works on the desktop, or you can use the same kind of capability through the browser, which has some advantage. And you can select data, you know, to add from the spreadsheet, and there's a pull-down menu options to accomplish that. There's a bunch of different filters and lenses for visualizing data. The point is that, you know, you're using the ability to separate what you know about the data, its structure, and so on, from you know, in this case, it being kind of embedded as a kind of an electronic pencil would embed something you wrote without knowing anything. And the benefits here is that you get ease of use. There's a rapid, low-cost solution in terms of a slow and time-consuming one, and also there's the flexibility in the face of inevitable change. When you go to a warehouse kind of strategy, you have to kind of you define everything you expect up front, and then the follow-on to that is that it's more expensive and difficult when things change. So this is what I would call a low-hanging fruit application. It's relatively lightweight in terms of, you know, the ontology demands, but it's the ability to, you know, combine and composite different information. The heavy part of the analytics, of course, is done in familiar tools. I'm now going on to slide number 4. This is a kind of a variation on the same theme we were talking about, but the headline here is better access to information through semantic search, navigation, query, and question answering. And the basic point here is, what if you can query into a document like you could query into a database? And the example here is from Recogno Financial, based on some work they've done for the mutual, with mutual fund industry information. A few years ago, there was a rules change where instead of having to put out information, publish the entire, say, 400-page prospectus on a mutual fund, they were allowed to put out the 4-page summary, thank God, but only in so long as you provided an interactive experience online. Now, where people could interact with it and so on. Now, meanwhile, the Investment Company Institute, over a number of years, the trade association has put together more or less standard taxonomy for certain key topics, and but of course, you know, buyers don't necessarily know industry jargon, and they're also, you know, the information you want to get at, what's the charge for this fund, might be buried in a table somewhere inside the data. So what was done here is to go beyond conventional database and content management system approach. And these tend to be, you know, labor-intensive, error-prone, costly to update, task to thousands somewhere in India, you know, extracting the information by hand. And this was basically involved semantically analyzing and indexing this corpus, which were all the legal filings, so like 250,000 of these documents, and using deep linguistics and domain knowledge, first to, you know, sync up the industry taxonomy with information in the documents in the file, and secondly, to be able to parse out and associate, you know, actual data that went with the topic, so that you could query and search, and so then you get navigation by, you know, facets. or topic. And then the third thing they went after was to be able to allow people to pose questions in natural language. And a query, so this is much like a multi-dimensional database kind of style of thing, except it's based on facets and concepts and so on that A, not only are defined in the taxonomy, but also just whatever people chose. And in this case, they were working with a company called Expert System out of Italy for the natural language. So the benefits here is you get, you know, concept-based faceted navigation. You also get automated semantic indexing, in something that's more consistent and accurate. And the upside on this is that there's bazillions of these kinds of applications that combine, semi-structured information in documents, deep language, linguistics, and semantic indexing. And so consequently, there's a lot of ways that ontologies can be brought to bear. Next, I'd like to go on to slide number 5. This is an application, the other way is that taking this idea of not trying to build a data warehouse to solve the problem is something that now is being taken seriously in kind of IT circles. The example here is from DOD's Chief Technology Officer for the Business Mission, Dennis Wisniewski, and I think it would be we may invite him to come in and speak at length on what they're doing. But the story he tells is that DOD, over an 11-year period, spent $1 billion trying to pull together a data warehouse linking all the human resource systems and information across the department. And after that time, they had nothing to show for it. As he described, we tried everything else and it failed. What they are now doing, and they don't talk about a warehouse, they talk about building semantic information webs that connect the existing systems of record, keep the information, where it was, but use a common domain ontology in the middle, connected to relational mapping ontologies, which go to source ontologies. So exposing the information of an RDBMS is one thing, but mapping that to the domain ontology and, and repeat. So it's a kind of a three-part, pattern. And then being able to look at what they call emergent analytics and so on. Analytics just become an ontology on the ontology. So in this slide, you'll see, kind of some different color coding for the sort of the core enabling and then the, value add additions. But the point here, the win for them was that instead of having spent 11 years in a billion, they had 9 months, had 90-day proof points, and they basically had solved the problem. And so this has now got very high visibility in DOD. They've been presenting at the assistant secretary level and so on. Federated search, information sharing, SQL-like querying across heterogeneous business databases. From basic to very complex analytics can be built on that, user-generated queries, and development extension of upgrades to systems of systems then becomes rapid, incremental, iterative, non-invasive, and a lot lower risk. So let's move on to another one. Okay, so one of the things that happens, we're on slide 6 now, and the caption here is do-it-yourself semantic agents for the purpose of discovering and aggregating and analyzing and reporting information. And the slide here is a complement of a company called Connotate. You can also do a lot of this kind of work with like Kapow. I know people that use Kapow to do these sorts of things. But, the use case is this, and agencies and or, individuals and or, Wall Street and or a whole lot of places need to find and monitor and aggregate and make sense of information from a great many of different sources. And doing this by hand, across internal or external sources or all of the above, it can be very time consuming. And it's also costly to custom program and update searches. So what are now happening in order to do this is building is a way of training intelligent software agents to access and harvest and tag and standard or standardize information, and so there's a lot of kind of base level stuff, the agents that understand the different kind of formats, and so there's some knowledge built in in order to make it so that somebody can kind of point and click. That is, whatever you can do with a web browser becomes the basis of training these agents to do their things. And so the semantics kind of are built up. It's you can also leverage this with, you know, with purpose-built or domain kind of ontologies, because it can use that to further, you know, recognize, classify, organize information. And the kind of benefits you get from this is something that's fast. It can be done iteratively. You can have thousands of agents working for you, you know, while you sleep. 360 degree views of topics across a lot of different sources, and productivity improvements from automated gathering and monitoring and alerting that come with that. So there's a, you know, again, it's a low-hanging fruit kind of a use case, and it's one that kind of indicates a template that's very important across a lot of intelligence and analytics kind of information. Now I want to go on to slide 7. In slide 7, we're talking about smart, knowledge-driven, citizen-centric services. And this example comes from some folks in the Netherlands, a company called Be Informed, who's been doing work with the EU and doing it in the Netherlands and doing it financial and services and in health. But a use case would be that say somebody wanted to had a brewery and they want to move the, you know, the factory from one town to another. Well, you might cross multiple jurisdictions and have to deal with permitting processes and so on. There could be, you know, hundreds, you know, of different kind of permitting kind of steps you have to go through. How do we provide a user a unified experience across that to help that happen? Another example was an immigration site. That is, when somebody's new to the Netherlands. You know, they arrive, they got all sorts of problems involved with relocation. You know, how do I get a driver's license? And here the, you know, the issue would be, kind of like a theory example. One would be, how do I get to the right information, you know, easily, information and context? But also, you know, how in the world do I get that driver's license? Can you help me get it done? But the situations that you're dealing with, all the different kind of problems that we have, are fall into the province of different agencies with, you know, kind of different systems and so on. So the question is there some way to do open source rules, you know, that we can share, you know, decision logic and basically organize around, you know, the situation and the decision to be made? And the answer here is yes. And, you know, their basic mantra is separating the know from the flow and the know from the function. And they're talking about basically knowledge, models, the declarative applications, you know, we can also call those ontology-driven applications, configured largely by user subject matter experts, with some aspects of it done by IT, i.e. the, you know, the connectors and the, you know, there's some internal plumbing, which is IT-ish. But basically, what you're dealing with are semantic models, in this case of the legislation or the authoritative sources, the knowledge, the processes, the data, and the user experience. And the core infrastructure consists of ontology or a network of ontologies, which is enriched with business rules. And all the functions use the, you know, the same ontology. You put the smarts, as it were, in the models, and, you know, then you can have dumb engines, you know, cranking processes that are made smart by, you know, the knowledge. So semantic information access, automated decision making, decision support, dynamic processes can be the result. The diagram in the lower left you can look at, and you know, just kind of shows the way they kind of segment or layer, you know, the thought of it. So where they're headed with this is what they're calling open knowledge as a service. That is, you know, decision centric processes that, you know, get around the silos of data, around the silos of different organizational, you know, boundaries, and bridges the gap between government and citizens. And they're well on the way, you know, to doing a lot of that. One could argue then that there's probably a lot of opportunity for, you know, for that sort of thing, that sort of application. But it, you know, it also allows, you know, automation, because you get your decision logic into a decision support. You can automate aspects of decisions and keep people in the loop too, you know, and you have a way for agencies to manage knowledge and rules, and thereby quickly adapt One of the drivers for this was the intent to become much more agile and rapid in making changes to systems from the time, you know, say the law, the rule, the regulation change, to it being implemented. And the result is, basically guaranteed compliance, less errors, improved service delivery for the public, and cost and time reduction. On slide 8, which I'm going to now, I just want to kind of take a deeper kind of look at this sort of application, but from a particular angle. The particular case example here is from financial services, but it's about policy-driven compliance, risk, and change management. And what happens coming out of Sarbanes-Oxley and the like, you have, in this case, it was a financial service firm that was hugely behind in one of its business lines because it couldn't keep up with its compliance requirement. And the knowledge to track and report this comprehensively, which is basically fragmented into separate documents and systems and different people making different decisions, was slow, prone to error, difficult to change. The way they quipped about it, our only solution, you know, to deal with this is to add more belly buttons, which by now meant that they were committed to just a global financial service. They have thousands of people that are just committed to compliance. So the point is, you know, how do we go from regulatory authority and those documents to policies to the documents that express those to be able to extract, you know, the knowledge from those in the form of semantic models, which can be in turn wired into the infrastructure, the system behaviors, the analytics, such that we can, you know, close the loop and know about compliance. And so that's exactly what this is about. It's a combination of a policy wiki, if you will, where you can bring in the documents, then you can connect the documents to, you know, structural, you know, schemas and ontologies, and then you can wire from the ontologies to, you know, the various kind of behaviors across the IT stack. And the benefits they're going for is development that is saving of resources. It's more rapid and less costly. But you're also dealing with an operation which is less labor intensive and more reliable and less error prone. And you have deep traceability across different forms of information. And I think this is a point that we don't emphasize enough with ontology. Namely, the knowledge can be expressed in a document, but to compute with it, I need to express it in maybe some other form. Yet, if I want to manage the change cycles and so on, I need to be able to, you know, connect the information across those different forms. So the notion of being able to automate also the change management and version control by virtue of operating from an ontology perspective, which is connecting, you know, content to data to programmatic representations, and being able to maintain the consistency across all of those and across the cycles of activity against them, both from a development standpoint and operation standpoint, as well as ongoing maintenance. So the benefits here are quite substantial. And on slide 9, I'm not going to, you know, go into a long story because I want to get on to our other speakers. But this slide is one that for ontology-driven applications and process scenes, primarily from an enterprise perspective. 8, you know, kind of categories where ontologies are being applied in applications, and this is some of the themes about that. And if you then look at slide 9, it's just my conjecture is that when we look at where we can apply ontology-driven approaches, it, you know, we find out it's about everywhere we look. And part of that is because, you know, every application that's ever been written, you know, you could argue, you know, there's been some ontology work to, you know, get the knowledge sorted out. It's just the way it's been, you know, kind of hard-coded in and black-boxed and so on. We're talking about techniques where we sort of separate the know from what we think we know about infrastructure, information, application functionality and user experience. And that brings me to the end of my talk, slide 11. So what I'd like to do now is turn things over to Greg Bardwell, who's the founder and CEO of Innovative Query. an innovative query as a company that really is focused on content intelligence and smart applications based on a very thoroughly built semantic platform that also, you know, is constructed in a way that you can integrate lots of other different kinds of capabilities with it. So at this point, I'm going to try to figure out how to sign off. I go to star 2. And Greg, you should hit star 3, I think, in order to activate your...
Well, thank you, Mills. Hi. I just did. This is Greg Bartle, as Mills said, CEO and founder of Innovative Query. And a lot of what Mills' examples are precisely what our platform is designed to do, with the exception that we really focus on the unstructured content, which by some estimates is 80% of all the information out there. And I actually did a quick search to find where that source of that 80% came from, and there's really no good source. I think it was an IBM engineer made it up about 20 years ago, but it's the number most people still continue to use, and it makes good marketing, so we use it. What we do is we analyze unstructured content, and we use open standards and semantic technologies and ontologies to be able to build a lot of the applications that Mills was talking about. And I'm going to go on to slide 3 right now, which is kind of our marketing piece, and I'll talk about this as we go along. Our real focus with this company is really to make the content intelligent and then build smart applications upon that, pulling out actually facts and information from actual content. And I'll give you some really quick examples of that as I go along. And then making it available to users, everything from improved user interfaces, knowledge navigation, smart agents. All of these were examples that Mills presented to us. And I'll present two specific use cases as I proceed. Slide 4, please. This slide is really just a high-level tactical overview of kind of the information flow of how our platform works. And I'll start from left to right. On the left, we basically take in content from any source. It could be a Google search, it could be a content management system, it could be SharePoint, it could be a database, just about any source. We have news feeds, we allow people to scrape the content from their desktop. It all gets sucked into our system, and then we use an ontology-based natural language processing to pull out facts and events from each piece of content that gets put in, and then we aggregate all these facts events in these knowledge bases, which are based up on semantic web technology and open standards. And then as you proceed over to the right, we wrap a nice, easy-to-use API around it, which is basic API that most web programmers can use. So you don't have to learn Sparkle or learn how to program, inferencing engines or learn about ontologies. It's all really kind of built into the platform, made it for the average programmer to use. Go on to slide 5, and I'll just give you a quick example of the sort of information that we're pulling out of the system. And the state of the art of the natural language processing system now is really being able to use ontology-driven analysis of text. And we use just about any different types of natural language processing systems. You can actually plug and play with our platform, which was one of the benefits. For example, the one of the customers of the NSA, they have their own natural language processing engine, so they can just plug theirs in and pull ours out. But in general, what it does is it pulls out concepts of entities. And it tries to relate them based upon the ontology, different events and facts that you are specifically looking for. And below is an example that's more of a intelligence community example about, you know, person A is doing business with an organization. They met with person B. They emailed a company that happens to be owned by somebody who's a known threat. Those are the type of information that can be pulled out using a natural language processing system. And you see it's using the semantic web technology, which is basically this linked data that Milt mentioned earlier. And our whole engine is based upon pulling those type of facts and events out and allowing you to build those smart applications. Okay, please go to slide 6, where I just kind of want to give you another simplified view of the end-to-end process. And again, on the left are these wrappers, and these are these connectors to these sources where we can collect content and filter out the content before we collect it and put it into the system. And as you proceed right, you know, we pull out these entity and facts, and we use these rule-based systems to categorize the documents or do some other things that I'll talk about as I go forward. The thing what we do to make it simple is we wrap an application engine around it, very similar to something like a PHP or Ruby, a simple programming, like a RESTful or SOAP programming interface, where you can start doing things, everything from basic content search, which we've also integrated in the system. So when you categorize documents, you can search based upon the categorized documents and then link them to other types of documents based upon the content and the relationships that were discovered, which allows us to do lots of nice applications such as collaboration, semantic search, link analysis, which is very popular in the intelligence community. Also do content intelligence dashboard, find out what's popular today, what people are working on. We also extract temporal-based information. We keep track of when things come in, dates that are found within the content, and then we can build timelines automatically of content and the relationships that we find in the content. Another feature that we also pull out is, of course, geolocation, which is a lot of tools to geotag, so we can geotag. So we can do silly things like we want to find, you know, all things that happened within, you know, 5 square miles of a given address that meet certain criteria using, you know, the semantic inference engine built in, which provides a lot of interesting applications for the intel community as well as, you know, marketing and knowledge, general knowledge discovery applications. Okay, I'm going to move on to slide 7, which I kind of want to kind of give you a very quick introduction of how this fits into the whole ecosystem. As Mill said at the outset, one of the real interesting things that we can do is because we're extracting content out of unstructured data, if you're looking for specific things, you can actually link it to structured data sets, you know, databases, everything from, you know, company stocks, from press releases to people to, HR applications or, you know, or the intelligence community. You're trying to follow people. So you can actually link that unstructured content to structured data sets, databases, and build applications. And our platform is really that section in the center with the red line around it. And we can quickly and easily integrate with these structured data sets. It's really all built right into our API. And in general, the whole point of the platform is to be able to build a whole class of ontology-driven applications that are focused on unstructured content where you actually don't know a lot of information beforehand. And over time, you can gather and collect information and build profiles of things. We have an example. It's called semanticnews.com. We're actually just monitoring news feeds, and we can build profiles of people just based upon how they're mentioned in news stories and track them over time by relationships, who they're doing business with, companies they're mentioned in articles with, where they're mentioned, where cities they visit, just about anything that's pulled out of this. And now I want to kind of briefly go over two case studies which really kind of illustrate the kind of the extremes, the simple case as well as the, you know, extremely complex case of what our platform is being used for. So we'll go on to case one on slide 8, please. And this one is really, it's kind of a similar to the Siri example that Mills gave. It's a smart agent type application. It's called Quote My Source, just quotemysource.com, which is currently in beta. You can go to the website and request a beta account. And the whole premise of this is half the time writing blog articles from everything from real estate people to SEO marketing is researching content. And what our platform does is it actually goes out and hooks to Google Search, Yahoo, and Bing, and it allows the users to configure different content sources that are interested in searching. And then we take some content they've already written, we analyze it, and we pull out similar content for them to come back into their knowledge base, which then they can review and then pull out quotes from that. One of the big things about search engine optimization is linking your content to other people's content. So the whole platform pulls out quotes from web pages, generates a link, and formats it in a simple way that the blogger can then write their own filler content around it and post it to their blog. And it really saves about 50% of the effort that they do and hopefully generates more traffic. Okay, in the second case on slide 9, starting on slide 9, is really more of a intelligence community-based case. What we're doing is we're supporting the Unified Cross-Domain Office, which was put into place after September 9/11 tragedy, to help the intelligence community agencies communicate and share information back and forth better. And we're doing a couple of things there. We're actually monitoring message traffic as part of their information augmenting government mission. And, let's flip to the next slide. I'll really focus on this one, because I think this is the more interesting one.
You talk a little bit louder, please.
Sorry, we're going to slide 10. This one is to monitor the message traffic between agencies to discover zero-day events. In other words, you know, to figure out some threat is going to happen before it's actually happened. And that's kind of the ultimate goal. And so what the system does is it takes these web logs that are collected by the collections of message traffic between these agencies, and it chunks them up into maybe 100 different messages at a chunk. And they use this ontology-driven natural language processing system that pulls out these events and facts that they're looking for. And it takes those 100 documents, all the hundreds or even thousands of events and facts, and it tries to match that to a threat ontology that's been designed by their analysts, by watching the past events and threats. So it uses this pipeline, if you will, that I illustrated earlier by capturing the content, pulling out all these events and facts, and aggregating across hundreds or even thousands of content sources, and then looking for those patterns that match these ontology threat patterns that they have discovered over time. And if it matches it, it actually goes back to the original content, pulls out the specific documents, highlights the content area specifically that were discovered, and it sends it on to an analyst for human review, or in some cases even sticks them in another web blog and allows another machine to process them for more higher fidelity threat analysis. And if you flip to slide 11, it's just kind of a visualization of the whole thing. You'll see from the top there's just multiple sources. It could be messages, human intelligence, emails, web pages, reports from analysts. filling into the system. They get processed. They pull out all these entity concepts, facts, relationships. It gets fed into our knowledge base, which then gets the ontology that's developed, and we apply the a rule-based system to see if those chunks of content meet any threats. And then if it does, it matches it to a standardized threat database and sends it off to an analyst to investigate further. And that's really all part of the agency's ultimate quest to really boil the ocean, monitor the entire web threat sphere, if you will, to find these zero-day events, prevent incidents, and before they happen. And that's really all I had. There's some additional slides there which kind of give you some more technical details, but I'm not going to go over them. I just included those for your viewing pleasure later on about our platform. My contact information there, if anybody has any further questions, I'll be happy to spend some time and give you some personal personal discussion about our platform and what can it do. Thank you.
Good, good. Thank you so much, Greg. Chuck, are you Rayberg, the CTO and chief scientist of the Trigen, are you unmuted?
Yes, I'm unmuted. Lisa, can you hear me?
I hear you fine. I presume everyone does.
Yes. Okay, good. All right. I'm going to present two cases. One is a little bit more into the natural language and understanding and how we would use ontologies to do this. So I'm right now looking at would be slide one, although it doesn't have the one on it. I wanted to state that that the design goal here for our work was that to make something that my mother could use. She's 75 years old and a technophobe.
Okay. So the slide deck, Chuck, the slide deck we're on is called Ontology and Rules Provide Rapid Natural Language Understanding?
Correct. Ontology and Rules Provide Rapid Natural Language Understanding. Good, thanks. So the idea was to make something that required little or no training to use and to direct. So with that kind of as a background, let's go to slide two. As you know, that there's a lot of complexity in parsing natural language. We wanted to be sure that we could detect and find the many ways of saying the same thing. You could say Joe gave Bob the ball was given to Joe by Bob, or Bob by Joe. You can say many ways of saying things. You can put, the man is fat, the fat man went to California, and so the facts can end up all throughout the sentences. There's also lots of ambiguity that's possible, and so the use of context and pulling things out of context is very important. We also recognize that most natural language processing approaches today use statistical methods to avoid the combinatorics of the syntax and semantics at various levels. They do that, and we chose to take the combinatorics on head on and not rely on statistical methods. That required a whole new kind of approach to NLP. And I'll say more about that coming up. There's also the notion that each term itself may have many senses, and each set of senses may have different synonyms and how all that plays out. Like if I say, if you're going to run a company, you could be managing the company. You could run to the store, then sprint. You could have a run in your stocking or whatever you could. So there can be nouns and verb forms of this. And so it gets fairly complex. And so we wanted to be able to essentially address the complexity and make it easy to use. It's just a background. Let's go to slide three. So the challenge was to identify we kind of, rather than boil the ocean, we would, given a specific text, we wanted to identify or locate semantically equivalent or nearly equivalent texts with the same meaning in given natural language description of this original interest, but look through perhaps a potentially large corpus of documents, you know, hundreds of thousands, and do it very, very quickly. So part of the challenge also comes about in how do we use and grow ontologies, the notion of an ontology as being something that contains information that your dictionary generally doesn't have. Like if you were to say a precious metal, in the ontology you could know that it was silver, gold, or platinum or something like that. And so we wanted to be able to grow ontologies and use existing ontologies and use that flexibly in our processing. And of course, then the question is, how do you map natural language to an ontology? And we needed to address that. So those kind of were kind of the challenges. First challenge is to, given a natural language description of your interest, go find semantically equivalent information and locate that in existing documents, and then bring that back and then identify what's semantically overlapping with what you're interested in and how it relates. Lots of applications for that so far. Let's go to slide. This is kind of an algorithm of how we did it at a high level, is that so we're given some natural language text, one or more sentences or questions. It can be actually a whole document itself. We parse and map the various constructs to semantic items in an ontology, and we call this mapping, this is the meaning, and we use what we call a meaning map, and we can say more about that probably offline. But given that, we generate then a set of reader rules using a fast rule engine to recognize all the combinatorics of language constructs that represent that mapping as having an equivalent meaning. That's the Joe gave Bob the ball, the ball gave, ball was given to Joe by Bob, all the various ways of doing that, including, of course, you have to include things like when they're giving a passive construction, the ball, Joe received the ball, okay, but you don't know who actually gave it, but if you were looking for a sentence that said, you know, the ball was given to Joe by Bob, you want to be able to find that kind of information. And which also points out to another interesting effect here is that as you go locate this information in the broader corpus, in the broader world, like the internet or whatever, you also find coming with it a lot of information that you didn't know before. So it's not enough to just like find what you already knew, find instances that talked about what you already knew. It also brings back information that you didn't already know before, so it actually kind of can grow information. We apply this high-speed reader rules to a large corpus of text, and to identify possible meaning matches. This is like speed reading. It doesn't mean that what we end up to do is look for clues in all the combinatorics and then bring it back to the mothership to apply a much more a detailed, but slower natural language processing step. On my laptop, which is not particularly powerful, I can read about 620-page documents in about 45 seconds, and this is highly parallelizable. So it can go on a much bigger machine. We've got an eight processor server that can crank through, you know, hundreds of thousands of documents in a very reasonable amount of time. Finally, then we generate a report showing the information found and how it relates to the original text, along with hyperlinks and stuff like that. Of course, you can go read the original text if you want, or you can just read the report. And other things can be generated as well at this point, like bibliographies. You can actually write a report and then have it go generate the bibliography for you with references back to the sections of other documents that describe what you're talking about in the report. Take a look at slide 5. So in order to look at this notion of the ontology and have it ontology-driven, so that you need to have a situation where when you change the ontology, when you add information to the ontology or curate it in any way, that the whole system automatically and instantly can take advantage of that. So when I'm looking for precious metals and I find and I add to my ontology a notion that this is silver, gold, or platinum, then the system should already be able to locate silver, gold, and platinum and all its synonyms in the appropriate context, with the appropriate synonyms in the appropriate context. It was also important for us when we looked at the language-independent ontology was to have the thematic items be able to represent things like smell and sound and pictures and video and not be simply a representation of words in a given language or in any language per se. And so you can actually say, I want this ontology, I want to recognize it in this language, and then put languages like that. The ontology itself, for a little, for the ontology geeks, the meta-ontology is, of course, concepts, instances, relationships, roles, generalization. Roles allow us to have multiple, you know, in area relationships and things that play different roles in kinds of concepts and relationships. Instantiations, characteristics, attributes, and all kinds of interesting things and units of measure. There are other concepts that are interesting as well, meta-concepts, but these are the core ones that we worked on. Let's take a look at slide 6. What makes this work, of course, is that we needed to have a very fast rules engine to be able to process natural language very quickly, and also to look for the clues. So we do it at 2 steps. One is at the analysis of the original text, and also we apply the same rules engine during the actual reading of large corpus, processing of large corpus. We create a language lab to define the combinatorics and the meaning maps. The rules are generated for the initial parsing, that part. You'd think that there would be a lot of rules, a lot of essentially combinatorics and such for a given language, but there really isn't that much. You can, it's like 80-20 rule. You can get, in our work so far, you can get with under about 300 rules, 300 combinatorics and expressions of it. You can cover quite a bit of the language, but you have to do it in a very flexible way. So that's you can contact me if you want to discuss that further as well. So we have a patented rules engine from years ago. How many years ago? 30 years ago, I worked with Charles Forgy at CMU. As part of Digital Equipment Corporation, and we wrote Ops 5, and he came up with the Evita algorithm. I've come up with a new algorithm that is not based on Evita and much faster with a much better memory profile that's capable of processing rules and scaling much higher. And so we employ that. And so, you know, the question is, how do you make natural language, how do you make, you know, combinatorically-aware natural language work at intractable time? You really want to have a rule system that can handle that sort of speed. Take a look at slide 7. So what we've achieved in doing this is that we can change the dictionary and get immediate effect. If you change the synonyms or you add a new term or you add a new sense of something, it automatically figures out where it is in the context of things and also its how it behaves linguistically in syntax and structure. And also when you change the ontology, it has immediate effect. And so as things grow, and the ontology does grow with use, so what it'll do is it'll, at least in the linguistic side, it'll find a term or something that is used and it's not really existing in the ontology. If it can find the appropriate sense of it, or even a more generalized set of senses of it in the dictionary, then it can create a semantic item as a concept or relationship, or and set it up as roles in its actual how it's being used. And so the ontology can actually grow. We actually start, often we'll start with a blank ontology, and then as we train it on things, we give it things to read, it grows and it figures out and then kind of like creates the network of relationships and maps it back to the language. And it also will grow the dictionary. If it doesn't find something in the dictionary, it'll go, oh, well, you know, this is playing the kind of role like this, and it linguistically plays out for that group. So very quickly, the ontology gets widely leveraged to the system at reader time and at training time and that sort of thing. It can also help to manage the context of what's being talked about in over a given set of documents. I guess the overall benefit is that you can sift through a large amount of text to find just what you're looking for without the need to read the documents yourself. You can you can describe what you're looking for, and then come back and say, well, these kinds of things, this is what it is. One person had was describing a process, you know, do step A, step B, step C, and described that. He didn't know how to do step C, really. So he said, okay, I'm going to describe step A, step B, step C, and D. And it went off, and it found some relevant documents to talk about the step that he didn't know really how to do. Let's take a look at the next slide, slide 8. So I just wanted to present this saying that the natural language processing, ontology-driven natural language processing, is certainly available today. It's very easy to use. I want to also say that there are two kinds of users. There's the user who actually has something that they're looking for, or information that they research they want to do. There's another user who plays with language and can play with a dictionary and carry the ontology, that sort of stuff. Or you can just plug in languages and ontologies and that sort of stuff and go. Rules-based technologies exist today to do flexible, rapid leveraging of ontologies to kind of massive amounts of data, and patents have been issued. We got into this originally to be able to leverage human-only knowledge and make it a computable. I think our system allows us to do that and do it very quickly in the area of reading and then making sense of what it is and then finding semantic overlap. So that's what that's one case example. Can we go to the next slide deck?
Hi, Jeff. It's Mike Bennett here. Sorry to jump in. Jeff Zook has got a hard stop time constraint, so I'm wondering, would it be possible to have Jeff on next and then come on to your second case study after that?
Sure, not a problem.
Excellent. Thank you. That's very kind of you. Thanks.
Sure.
Hi, Jeff. Are you unmuted?
Right. Can you hear me now?
Yes, very well.
Yes, that's perfect.
Good. So, can you project my slide?
It's projected, yes.
But also call out the slide you want to be on.
Yeah, they're projected now.
Okay, so let's start with slide 2, the second slide. So, for selling ways, we continue buying emerging companies and systems, integration of the systems become one of the central issues. And systems are talking with different business terms and have different business, not only vocabularies, but processes. So it naturally raised the question of common model that led to ontology. So we made the case. Now, after the case was made and we started working, we figured out that there are some real challenges related to ontology itself, how to create it and make it manageable, how to engage subject matter experts, and how to make whatever we're doing not only extra work for subject matter experts, but immediate benefit. It's all hard questions. I will show what we're doing in this regard. So as a approach to the solution, we selected to figure out what are hardest things, subject matters working on, and we try to approach these hardest things with an ontology solution that helps a subject matter expert and at the same time collect ontology for the enterprise. Let's go to the slide 3. So in the slide 3, it's pretty obvious how we made the case for ontology. You can see that from the design pattern, point-to-point integration, natural progression was centralized integration, where with point-to-point integration to connect one system to existing, let's say, 10 systems, you would need 10 lines. With centralized integration design pattern, where there is a central block or hub that knows about existing systems, you only need one interface from new system to this centralized block. Now, when we talk about multiple systems that talk business, different business terms, where one system talks about the same thing with different vocabulary, now we need to expand centralized integration design pattern with conceptual interface design pattern. So conceptual or canonical model would include conceptual meaning. Let's say we have on one system one set of abbreviations, on another system another set of abbreviations, but what it really means? Eventually it means to create an ontology. Let's move to the slide 4. When we start creating ontology, pretty quickly we figure out that a single ontology model doesn't work. No, in theory it does, but in practice it is really hard to manage single ontology. Plus, we need multiple channels. When I talk about multiple channels, we really need inputs from domain experts. And domain experts know their own area. They don't really know a lot of connections to other areas. So it was crucial for us to allow to grow our tree of knowledge with multiple branches and allow subject matter experts to be, if not completely in charge, to have sufficient input. And that means that we allow this input not to be complete. So you can see the rules that can be captured best by business architect or business analyst, and enterprise semantic architect is more in charge of facilitating this work and making sure that there are connections. So last, polishing and connecting ontologies. So we allow a partial view for each ontology and where are initial conflicts between ontologies. Now, working on our own Selimai ontology in parallel, we participate in the industry work on financial ontology, the work that is led by EBMC, by Mike Bennett, and I'd like to use this opportunity to say a couple words about this particular work. I actually saw first time this very well arranged informal collaborative work by several financial companies. It is done in a very friendly atmosphere, and it is really working. But just praise what Mike is doing. Let's move to the fire, to the next slide. So we try to stay connected to this ontology while working on our own ontology. And we have several Selimai participants who almost every call with Mike. So now this really hard task, how to engage subject matter experts. They are so busy, and it's not only about Selimai, it's about every company. Subject matter experts are focused on their own tasks, and any ontology work for them, extra. And to really engage subject matter experts, you have to give something back. You have to provide such work that will give advantage on the go. Now let's move to slide 6. Now, we started, of course, with a bunch of documents with the idea, yes, we have a lot of structured and unstructured data. We just need to elevate it to knowledge level, transform to ontology. But looking into what we currently have, again, it's not only about this particular company. I believe that every company has a similar picture. If you look into the documents, they have very little semantic value. They were prepared by people for people. And I believe with this new generation of tools and ideas related to semantic web, semantic world, we need a new school how to collect information in the way that it is not only for human interaction, it is also a valuable input for machines. So it is very hard to elevate information that is low value to the knowledge level. So when people prepare this information, people understand that, yeah, if something is missing, you can ask a question. So with this idea, we extrapolate, we move this idea of asking right questions to the process when subject matter experts are preparing information. So when we expect subject matter experts to prepare some information that is, and it's almost in every process, every development document, when this is going to be not only a source for next layer of developers, but it might be a source for a machine, so this information is preparing, has to be preparing with proper understanding, and we help with what we call conversational interfaces. We ask necessary questions to make sure that What we are looking for is there. Last necessary question to make sure that there is no gap between existing set of concepts and the new concept. Even not completing all these goals will still help to provide better information. And this is the first where our subject matter experts get in kind of school, a school to provide more valuable semantic rich information. There is also a set of tools to convert this information into ontology. Now, I can give you just one example. One example that is related to integration tasks. When you integrate several services, you have to move data, and very often you move data based on rules. And this is just an example of a rule written in if-else. It is pseudo language, and this pseudo language can be transformed into more precise decision table. This more precise decision table is a single source for people, they can understand it, and for a machine. Machine can use it immediately for validation, for testing, and really for data mapping. We provide similar but different kind of formal approaches to documentation. So the level of knowledge, the level of knowledge sources is better and more ready for ontology tools. That's the message that I wanted to deliver this time.
Okay, thank you. I think what we're going to do is, unless somebody's written something in, I think we're going to move on to the second half or the second example from Chuck. Chuck, are you voice activated?
I am voice activated now.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
So we're going from rules for language to rules for making trucks.
Okay. The title of the talk is Ontology and Rules Provide Mass Customization of Vehicles. And if we'll take a look at slide 2. I'm not seeing slide 2. Okay. This is about a Fortune 250 company that offers a wide variety of trucks and buses, a lot of school bus markets. In fact, I think they have the largest market share of school bus markets in this in the United States. And a wide variety of trucks, usually Class 8 vehicles, over-the-road hauling vehicles, but a lot of extreme use vehicles as well. So that's kind of the background. Go to slide 3, please. Essentially what happens is customers describe the desired vehicle, selecting the base model, and a wide range of attributes in vehicle length and features about the truck. One of the things that's important to know is that truck or bus is that different school districts and different jurisdictions have different requirements for buses. The stanchion can be between the seats, can have a certain length. The amount of exits can be different. And buses and trucks can also belong to fleets which have different kinds of requirements, different kinds of gearing. If you're in downtown Boston, where we're near, you want to have a relatively narrow vehicle that has appropriate length. But if you're going over the country, kind of large vehicle. So there, the value proposition here is that you get to have the truck your way, and so that you can essentially build one of a kind vehicles. Combinatorics huge. You can't possibly have built every kind of thing that people can order, and each vehicle off the line can be one of a kind. So let's go to slide 4. So the challenges that this order may never have been built before And so you need to identify the best set of parts and assemblies, the component locations, like where to drill the holes, where to put everything, and we call this the vehicle configuration. The different parts and assemblies will be available, this is another challenge, will be available at different plants at different times. So on a given date when you're going to do a configuration of a vehicle, you have to say, as of this date and as of this plant, or you can say, choose me a plant that I can build this up as of this date. You can manipulate the variables. So that's the challenge. Let's go to slide 5, please. Okay. So the ontology is for describing the truck and the construction of the truck and how it relates to an order is defined both bottom-up and top-down. In the sense of bottom-up, the design engineers specify, you know, in their own area of expertise, specify which combination of parts and assemblies satisfy the needs, fulfill the needs of a given model and features and its attributes and so forth like that. And so if they have it in this variation, it's like this. And so they identify very instance-level things, and the system then can use generalizations that have already been identified. But the system then can identify what has been designed to work together and actually create generalizations, actually make abstractions. These things are all like each other. And then they can start using those abstractions, and so it starts to build, in that sense, an ontology from the bottom up. Of course, vehicles are largely designed from the top down as vehicle system, subsystem, down to the components and assemblies. And so you have both ontologies in play driving the decisions of the actual construction. So there are standards to be applied to them. Let's take a look at slide 6. So the solution that in practice now is this domain-specific user interface. One of the things that was important, of course, is that the engineers need to specify everything in terms of what they understand in terms they're familiar with. So you don't want them to have to know anything about knowledge engineering or creating rules or anything like that. So everything gets generated for them. Essentially, the rules and such is all. It's kind of like macro code. It just gets generated out by looking at how the engineers define things working together. And then where engineers then work only in terms of their ontology. They can add terms to their ontology. They can add abstractions and generalizations. Once again, we employ the same fast rules engine that was described earlier. This particular application has more than 600,000 rules with an average of 24 condition elements. These are like and or, not, all that sort of stuff, and then parenthesized sessions and such. I can run this on my laptop in under 10 seconds to configure a truck, and I call it the world's fastest only because when we started doing this, we had no intention of actually creating a new algorithm at all. We intended to use what was existing. So we spent time trying to apply existing rule systems to, commercially available and open source systems. And so we actually made an open source system using NASA CLIPS, I think. And it did to handle the scalability issues. But it didn't come close to the performance for lots of reasons because of the memory constraints on the algorithm and such. And so that was part of the solution. Let's take a look at slide 7. So the ontology, as it kind of grew and gets used and becomes known to the people, creates a quick and reliable specification of new variations. Essentially, they describe their world. The configuration rules are generated every night. On average, 100 to 1,000 a day, depending on what's going on. Sometimes a lot of goes on when a new model is being released. Sometimes only maintenance releases. Everything is done live, real time, to manage the synchronization of data. Happens nightly, sort of thing. All the rules are specified in terms of the ontology. You can change the ontology, and the next time
the rules get the system gets generated, all of the, you know, all of what's true in the user interface gets specified in terms of the ontology, and the rules then are generated, and they are reflect the realities that just change pervasively across the system all the time. Thousands can be affected by certain things. Of course, you have to manage the designated times and plants, and so there's a whole world of effectivity that gets layered on top of it just for practical purposes. It allows them to flexibly change parts and suppliers, new models and variations, can reuse a previous combinatorics that were already proven out and tested out. One of the things that if it was shown that there was a part combination that was error prone or given to wearing out or for whatever reason, they could recode the orders and then have it changed overnight, so that they can even so the very next truck that rolls off the vehicle rolls off the line can have whatever ECO engineering change order or whatever sort of thing that needed to happen. And that is made possible by this ontology, by having an ontology that the system then is kind of built around and reflects. Slide 8. So I would say, you know, this is kind of like a high-level book report of a project here, but the ontology-driven engineering is in place today in mission-critical applications in large corporations. And the rules-based technology can rapidly leverage the ontologies and reliably reflect change to meet business goals. And in many industries, there are significant opportunities, like in this company, for mass customization and long-tail type work, where one-of-a-kind thing can come off. And how do you manufacture that on an assembly line and make that work? And again, this is about unlocking knowledge assets for those opportunities. And that's my presentation.
Great. Chuck, one quick question. Is there any simulation component with this for checking, you know, like a configuration or something like that?
Right, exactly. One of the things they do is there's a whole bunch of things called test order coding that kind of goes through and will very rapidly, you could say, show me code this order, and then tell me what the result is. But also tell me how it is you went about. What was the reasoning that the rule chain, if you will, that you went to, and why you made the decision you can. Of course, it does order correction and rejection. You can get bad orders, and so it can tell you something that's not buildable. I mean, that's a nice combination, but we can't build it. Or you know, you left out this sort of thing, and in order to make this work, you know, your intent was, we deduce your intent as this, we're going to infuse this on Jody, what do you think? And we exact all of that together.
Okay, thanks. Mike, are you back online, Mike Bennett?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, so now we're going to move from the realm of production rules for manufacturing to the role of ontology and systemic risk.
Thanks. Okay, I'll try and be quick with this because I'm conscious of time. Right, so let's see. My slides are up. Yes. Okay, so to go to slide 2. And again, I'm just summarizing, as previous speakers have done, what is the challenge that we were faced with, what solution did we produce, and then what are the benefits that were realized. So in terms of our agenda of making the case for ontology, you know, what was it that we could do better with an ontology? So the challenge was essentially an industry standard challenge, so not an application as such, but the whole industry finding their way towards what it was they really wanted, which was standard terms and definitions. and various things were tried, they were not it. So the solution was to produce a semantic model. I will describe very briefly the features of that before going on to some of the more recent work on systemic risk and some of the interesting things that are happening as a result of this initial project. So the benefits, I guess you could add to that benefit the work that we've gone on to do in those areas. But the benefits of the ontology approach specifically was how subject matter experts could contribute to the building up of terms and definitions from a business point of view, and so enable us to deliver an industry standard that a whole industry, the financial industry, could use. So on these next few slides, so if we go to slide 3, on these next few slides, I'm going to describe the initial project and what we did. So by way of background, so in order to show what it was that we could do with ontology, what had been tried before, well, firstly, about 10 or 11 years ago, there was an initiative to use XML to create a market standard for market data definition, standardizing on terms for various financial market data features. A very good standard, but where was the semantics? This was the feedback, and bear in mind that the industry stakeholders in this are not technical experts. They've not really heard of semantic technology at this point in time, but they're starting to say, well, hang on, how do I put a business definition against that XML element when it appears that you use that XML element to do three different things because I'm looking at some physical design? So there was a mismatch there, and people started to recognize the question they were really asking was, where is the semantics? Then we had a much more sophisticated project within ISO in Technical Committee 68. There was an initiative to create a standard data model using UML in order to capture the semantics of terms in messages. And this time they explicitly talked about semantics, but we're using a technical design notation, which very quickly became a logical data model, which was very useful and very important. But again, what we found particularly was business subject matter experts could not look at the completed UML model and recognize what was missing or validate what was right or question what was wrong. Then another activity over in the States, there was some initiatives to get standard definitions for municipal bonds. And so the DTCC, the Depository Trade and Clearing Corporation, carried out a vocabulary gathering exercise. They got all the business subject matter experts round the table, and fights broke out about what words people used. So one person would have a word in their database, amortization, and it would have one meaning. Somebody else would have other words that were different. Once the focus was on meaning, then it became much easier. They recognized now that what they really wanted to focus on was semantics. And they did that, and they said, well, okay, we've got these semantics now for municipal bonds. Where do we book it? So it became clear that we needed a industry resource in which to capture business semantics at a business semantic level. Next slide, slide 4. So in terms of the making the case for ontologies, one of the things we recognized in planning this whole summit was that there are lots of different things that different people use ontologies for, different use cases, different kinds of ontology that are directed at different things. So what we created was essentially a business conceptual model. It wasn't a semantic application. There was no sparkle this and sparkle that. It's essentially using semantic technology to create a business conceptual model to sit on top of logical design models and physical models within the industry. So it was interesting that some stakeholders understood this and some did not, because in the financial services industry, there's a wide range of levels of sophistication in how technology is managed, and that doesn't just go with the size of the bank, unfortunately. So basically, a lot of folks were more used to message models and were just starting to understand the idea of abstraction into logical data models. So at the beginning, there were a lot of questions: aren't you just creating another data model? And there was a lot of education involved to explain the difference between a data model and a business conceptual model. But during the 5 or so years that we've been doing this, there's been a growing awareness of semantics. I used to be banned from using the O word, ontology, at any business meeting until other people started to use that word without me prompting them. Next slide. So a quick glimpse at what we did. This is a screenshot of the tool that we use. It's a standard UML modeling tool. I have done no programming to make this happen. The only programming you'll find is a piece of JavaScript for a menu on the website, and that's it. So we configured this UML tool called Enterprise Architect, and on the screen, slightly blurry I expect, is a credit default swap, just to show you that, you know, the things that caused the crisis while we were doing this could be understood and seen in a visual but business-friendly format. So next slide, I think. So how did we do this? What kind of ontology did we build? You know, what was our solution to this problem? Well, it was clear that we had to square the circle between having formal logical constructs that could formally represent facts and things in the business domain to create this business conceptual model. In order to make it clear that that's what we were doing, we needed to not just adapt some data modeling format and declare bits of it to be semantic, because we were still battling with the education of people on the difference between a data model design and a conceptual model. So by embracing a known standard like OWL, we were able to get that formality and make it really clear that this is a semantic model of the business domain, the model of the problem, not the model of the solution. Also with OWL, it allows you to define everything underneath the common class, which is thing, and to describe everything to business subject matter experts using set theory that they learnt at primary school or grade school or whatever. So that's why we decided to use OWL. But at the time that we started this in 2008, we could not really put any of the OWL tooling in front of our business subject matter experts. I was already told to keep the philosophy out of sight. We had already made clear that we needed to keep technology out of sight. If we want to get the full range of business subject matter expert knowledge, we had to try and create the kind of visual output that made it not technical, not looking technical, and make it clear that we weren't looking at a data model or anything like that. So we picked up a meta model standard, which was just in a very early draft at that time, called the Ontology Definition Meta Model. And that defined both a meta model and a UML profile for RDS schema and for OWL. And so that allowed us to use a UML tool with the flexibility over diagrams and reports and so on that a good UML tool gives you, while presenting simple pictures. We could turn off all the angle brackets and plus signs, all the technical stuff that business people know they don't know. We could turn all that off. So we used this draft of the ODM standard. We had to make some adaptations for the tool we were using and a few other tweaks to make it a little bit more visually friendly in our particular tool, Enterprise Architect. And in so doing, we also extended beyond ODM to create the idea of what we call archetypes. This is similar to ontology patterns that some folks talk about, defining the simplest possible kind of thing that each thing is, giving that its own color or its own graphic appearance, and so creating these graphically rich diagrams that are beyond what OWL itself will do. So it's extended ODM and extended OWL in a UML tool. Next slide, slide 7. So briefly, before we get subject matter experts to participate in our sessions, we generally give them a one-hour presentation. Without this, there are too many misconceptions. Is it a data model? What does this arrow mean? And so on. With the one-hour presentation, and we start from this screenshot, which shows shares, different classes of share, like ordinary shares and so on, and we explain the whole thing in about 40 minutes, and then we field questions with them. I'm obviously not going to give you that talk now, but basically we explain the taxonomy of species and how the set theory constructs, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and swims like a duck, it's a member of the class of all things which are a duck. That usually gets it clear to them, and then we show them some of the navigation. And what you're seeing there is the public website available on the web. Anybody can go there. The whole project is open to everybody, by the way. And then we take them round that menu on the left-hand side there. Next slide. And then this is the more difficult-looking thing that people see when they come to our review sessions that Jeff was describing earlier. This is a little piece of the credit default swap model. So we go right in on the screen and we make changes in real time. If it's a complex change, I just write it as notes and do it another time. So we have weekly one-hour calls, which everybody is welcome to. We go through each part of the model, we validate the terms, we validate the definition, so that what was a draft model becomes the final thing. Next slide. So, initial project, which is still underway, we've completed certain parts of it. We get that the subject matter experts do get the format. A lot of people needed education in different ways, particularly we get data modelers who have business knowledge but are used to data things as well. We found that when we got onto derivatives, the formal semantics approach, we used the REA ontology from Jim McCarthy at Michigan State University to define contracts and transactions as building blocks for our derivatives. And so basically we find that, you know, it is possible to take actual formal ontology material and put it in front of subject matter experts. Next slide. So we then use this to do a proof of concept in one part of the model, which is mortgage-backed securities. And this was a combined project between the EDM Council, European Central Bank, IBM Research, and a whole bunch of US agencies, analytics providers, and so on, to demonstrate whether it would be feasible to take this semantics repository and tag new securities semantically at the point of issue, so that you could take the information in the prospectus, either with text extraction, like we've seen on some of the earlier presentations, or by some other means, that if these securities were tagged semantically at the source, would that make systemic risk oversight easier to achieve, particularly in the context of Dodd-Frank with the Office of with actual research and the parallel things going on in Europe with the European Systemic Risk Board, and particularly in things like mortgage-backed and asset-backed securities, where the underlying is a pool of loans, and then there's individual loan information, and this is all held in different silos with no common language combining them. Could we use semantics to make those connections? That was the aim of this proof of concept. Next slide, slide 11. So we took the mortgage-backed security content from the semantics repository. IBM Research converted that into what we call a semantic data model. This is in data model notation, but derived directly from the semantic model without all the extra stuff that we have in OWL that gives things their meaning. And then we identified how those two relate to each other, so pairs of relationships, where there's a relationship added in birth, becomes an association in the data model, and then they add private and public keys and all that database stuff. We did a lot more business analysis and review with subject matter experts on mortgage-backed securities, cash flow waterfall models, and so on. And then what happened was we got some stuff from the risk analysis folks on the terms they need for risk analysis, and we reverse engineered that into a semantic data model and then into the semantic model, where it turned out that a lot of it was new material on loans. And this is where Jeff and others have now got involved creating subject matter expert review into a whole new set of material around loans in order to meet that requirement. Next slide, slide 12. So again, the benefits in this is that we have business engagement in the project. We proved that so you can create a business conceptual model, which itself can be used by different firms in a range of different ways. So some folks to integrate as a common point of reference across different systems, and of course across the supply chain as a whole, because in financial services, the business process flows through many different firms. You have brokers, asset managers, custodians, exchanges, the whole lot. So integrating all of those firms is one huge benefit, and we have banks, for example, now using the semantic repository to drive a model-driven approach with data models. And also, from this proof of concept, we demonstrated the idea of semantic tagging as a tool for systemic risk. And although the main project is over, there's some work ongoing with a group of academics and agency folks and banks and so on to use that material to create things like bond calculators and systemic risk applications, and even to create the idea of using semantics to enable a data-centric environment where open-source applications can be developed for analyzing publicly available information on systemic risk. And so that's some of the benefits. It's hard to quantify that in terms of monetary terms before and after. This use case is really a standardization effort from an industry's demand, and then we're now opening up potential benefits for, you know, what happens next time the world's financial system crashes, rather than any measurable amounts of money that we can put a figure on. So apologies for that. But it's certainly...
Right, but the calculation there is that what does it cost you to have a meltdown, or, you know, what is it worth you to be able to head it off?
Yeah, what is Western civilization worth? I can't... So that's me. I'm done. So yes, exactly.
Well, one quick question.
5 minutes for questions for everybody. So apologies.
Well, one quick question though. You had mentioned that you're working with a group that's putting a project idea together as part of for the Office of Financial Research. It's an open financial.
Yes. That's
and
correct.
Can you describe some of what that program's about, or what that new thing you're working on?
Sure. There's a fairly informal group of us, an open financial data group, and essentially, to start, the Office of Financial Research, which is one of the organs defined in the Dodd-Frank bill last summer, it started as an initiative from a group of concerned citizens, and those concerned citizens put this thinking together under the heading of the National Institute of Finance, and that was what became the OFR. And so it's really through that group of people staying in touch that we're starting to develop these ideas about...
ideas about...
We lost you, Mike. Oops.
You couldn't hear me.
There you go. Mike, you're...
Excellent. Okay, we have about a minute left. So, apologies, we had so much other good stuff that I underestimated what we could cover. Anyway, questions?
You were in the middle of answering a question from the bill. I did not see the bill there.
Yeah, creating a total environment using semantics for bond calculation and regulatory modeling and such things. So, anybody drop me a line if you want to know more about that.
Okay. Are there any other questions that we have at this point? In that case, what I'd like to bring back Peter and want to thank everyone, especially our speakers who put together case examples and that covered the range. You know, we tried to cover a range from sort of low-hanging fruit and relatively, you know, shallow semantics or, you know, limited ontology to things that were driving entire businesses' use of semantics and ontology at the level of across all industries or across industries. And we can certainly, you know, come up with more examples when we do our next session, and we look forward to that. So, Peter, let me turn it back to you and with my thanks.
I should thank you and Mike for putting this great session together. But just a couple of announcements. I mean, there's another session next Thursday organized by Michael Gruninger, Mike Ushold and Nicola Guarino is on ontology application framework. They are going to tell us how to put things in place so that at least we are not saying this technology doesn't work, because maybe it's this technology doesn't work with this particular solution or this particular requirement. So let's come back next Thursday to hear how they're going to sort of get us organized in a framework. The other announcement I want to make, most of you probably have seen it on the mailing list, is that we have a solicitation out asking people to make contributions to sound bites and elevator pitches that they have been using or they consider useful to make the case for ontology. So please go back to that message and send in your best shot. So back to Nils. And Mike.
Okay, thank you. And are we done now?
Yes, we are, looks like.
Okay. Well then, goodbye.
Okay. Bye, and thanks everyone.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.